Welcome to the show. My name is Alex.
And I'm Lizzie.
And this is What Is Fromcast. And we are reviewing a rewatch of season one, episode four, Rock and a Far Away.
Far Away.
I just want to thank people that are listening in either on Instagram or on the What Is From channel or Facebook or wherever you are. If you want to put stuff in the chat, you're more than welcome to. But the more important thing is this is a pretty epic episode for us.
Yes, it is. It snuck right up on me.
It snuck right up on us. I know. Yeah. And why is it? It's our 50th episode. And
50!
I can't believe it. Some people are commenting. I just want to show one of the comments. Hey, John, and hope you guys are having a great night, and you're having a great night too. And I have some other comments from some people, but he's asking about the vibe. Sorry, I'm trying to do three things at once here. And if you guys are
the one.
I know. Let's try to narrow it down to one. If you want to hit the subscribe button, please. And, you know, we're trying to get to that 500 mark on our Instagram. I mean, on our Facebook, on our YouTube. I am so out of it today. It is not even funny. I'm so off. So let's like rewind here. And
let's just get into it.
Let's just get into it. Okay. So what were your first thoughts on the episode?
You know, I continue to be blown away by how fresh this actually looks. And at this point, I'm probably well into double digit viewing on the episodes, but it still hits me as if I haven't seen it before. It's just so very sharp.
You know, it's funny. It's just funny because every episode seems to be epic.
Yeah.
And you think it reminds me a lot of The Walking Dead. And in terms of you think that it can't get any better and then it does. I mean, they've only had 20 episodes and right now we're on episode four. But it seems like every episode is a piece of the puzzle, as you like to say.
Yeah.
And I forgot what happened in this episode. A lot of things happened. And there's a lot of foreshadowing to season two, which I find really kind of interesting. You know, we learn a lot. Looking back at what happens to Sarah, that's kind of an important thing that happens to Sarah. So, my first thoughts are basically the same. It's like every time we watch this, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Now I want to talk about the cold open because there was none.
Right.
Which I want to point out is that, you know what? I think that they have the balls to do a cold open and then they have the balls to not also do a cold open.
Yeah.
And even though they didn't do a cold open, it was pretty powerful that first scene.
Well, I quickly forgot that they hadn't. So, before we begin, going through the scenes, any comments you want to throw in? Has anyone made any comments?
Oh, wait, I do have one comment.
Okay.
And it's from, wait, let me just find it. I had it in my email. Oh yeah. Wait, it's from Nova Scotia.
Hey, what's up guys? Hey, I want to say congratulations on your 50th episode and I got some people here.
What up?
You guys, happy, I'm sorry, there's shadows, but you know, we're working, we're trying to get it done.
We're in a horror show, that's why there's shadows.
All right, you guys, congratulations.
Thanks, guys, for your support.
Peace out.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Alex! Oh my God, I could cry. Oh my God! I can't believe you didn't even tell me. Oh my God! And I'm going back and forth with Liz. Oh my God!
So, just so you folks know, I have been working on this for weeks. Okay. Wait, let me first say, I have been working with this for weeks to the point where Liz Saunders actually Instagrammed me on my other podcast because she didn't know that you didn't have access to it. And you know what, folks? I know other people are freaking out too. And I want to tell you, if it wasn't for this lady next to me, to my left or right or whatever it is, you know what? I wouldn't know what it's like to be a big time podcaster. And what do I mean by that? You know,
because I don't see myself as that at all.
No, what I mean by that is when I say big time, the fact that we're podcasting on a show and the fact that they know about us. That's what I mean by big time. And when we started this thing, and I know we've said it 1,000 times before, we connected about 2 years ago at Comic-Con, and she had this idea, and I thought she was full of whatever, because I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever, you know, let's do this. And she has been amazing, and I wanted to surprise you with this. I told you I had something that I couldn't tell you about. And I have another thing, but it's not here yet. So, it kind of got lost. But I just wanted to, you know, surprise you with that little one. And
I couldn't be more surprised. And, you know, I forgot what I was going to say, but I'm blown away. Like, the cast of From has helped us so tremendously and have been so incredibly gracious and kind and generous, like generous. And I'm I can't believe I am just, Alex, thank you so much. That surprise. You know, I was locked out of the car today with Charlotte inside.
I know we're not supposed to laugh, but knowing you, I'm laughing.
Well, I'm standing in this parking lot that is notorious for being somewhat dangerous. You know, you just have to walk in and come back out. And I was outside for like an hour and I didn't have my coat. Thankfully, it wasn't too cold, but it was kind of crappy. So, oh my God, like it's amazing how far different a day can become in 1 second.
Well, I just wanted to also tell you, Liz Moy and Scott and a whole bunch of other members of the cast wanted to say congratulations to you and to me. And I've been kind of trying to keep it all under wraps, but I just wanted to say thanks because I didn't think I'd ever do a podcast for this long, and it should be longer, but you know, they had to go on strike, and you know, that's why we're here.
We'd be pretty close to watching season 3 right now,
or we'd probably be going to closer to 70 episodes.
We're going to be there pretty soon with this.
We're going to be there pretty soon. That's right. That's right. So let's get into it now that we freaked her out. And folks, like I said, if you guys are into the show like we are and you want to hit the subscribe button, I wish, unfortunately, I could have captured your face on camera. Because I wanted to try to do that because, folks, she's like this, she's like this, she's like this, and she was freaking out. So
I I was like, what's going on? Just like, what is going on? And I'm just going about making videos this week, and I have a new file. Like, all right.
Let's talk about young Victor. And folks, if please put him in the chat. I'm going to monitor him. And just so you know, I might not be able to get to them all. And I'm not trying to like bombard Lizzie with all this stuff, because I know how she wants to hit me over the head with her files when I start bombarding her with stuff. But
it's not that. It's just I lose my train of thought so easily.
I'm trying to be honest. You know what I mean? I have my skull with my candy. It's my Halloween one on. So I am ready to go. So what do you want to talk about? When I purposely wore this because of young Victor in the cellar. So go.
Oh, okay. All right. So the first scene opens with the root cellar door and, you know, coming open, and you don't know who you're going to see, but out comes Victor with the lunchbox in his hand, and it's little boy Victor, the young right. Victor.
And Eli.
Eli, right? And you can hear a dog barking in the distance, but you don't see the dog. And the root cellar, you know, based on what I've seen, is that road, that dirt road that goes up to Colony House. And it's not far from the town. So it's closer to the town than it is to Colony House. And there are dead and mutilated bodies on the road, on that dirt road, as Victor's coming out. And it looks like there's two bodies and two random legs. And I kind of thought that the bodies had all their legs, but maybe I just couldn't see it well enough and it was an arm or something. And Victor stares at the bodies and holds the lunchbox to his chest. Like, he's just like this. And, you know, you look at a kid that age and you just feel for them, you know?
He's freaking out. And I don't blame him, because I'm freaking out. I mean, just the bodies, like, and I know this is not it's a funny thing. Like, how long did they just sit there before he did anything with them? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, when you think about
that's something to think about, because he did something, you know, he was the last one in that town. But the realization that I had is that this was after, you know, reading, I went back and added this note that this episode is about Victor realizing it wasn't just a bad dream. Because this is something he talks about in season two. And this is why I like this rewatch, because we can reference future episodes, because we're not trying to keep things under wraps and not, you know.
Right. I mean, we're not trying to spoil what's going to happen.
Well, it's out there.
No, but my point being is, but at the same time, we're trying to stay within the episode. But if there's other things that come up that are related to it, we're going to talk about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that sounds kind of weird when you say it that way, but it's so true, because, you know, we're not trying to go after it. But that scene was, and we talked to Eli. I talked to him once, which we're going to eventually re-interview him to put on the podcast. But, you know, that takes a lot. I don't know how these kids do it. I mean, I know you've worked with kids that work in horror. I mean, that's some really freaky stuff.
Yeah.
And as an adult, I'm freaking out with it. I can't even imagine what a kid like that at that age is doing, freaking out with that.
Yeah. I mean, some that stuff can be scarring, which is a lesson we learned from Linda Blair. And consequently, I worked on The Exorcist Believer. And I was at Days of the Dead this weekend, and the child psychologist that worked with us on set came and sat with me at my booth for a while. And, you know, the girls were, you know, pretty well adjusted. I mean, they would be laughing, skipping, giggling all the way into, you know, the chairs, because they'd be strapped in and they'd be in that stage four makeup, which Christopher Nelson and his amazing team would apply over multiple hours. But they would be laughing, giggling, and all of a sudden it would be like an action. And those
and then, boom.
Girls, just demons. And then the scene, you know, they'd yell cut and they'd be back to giggling again. So
yeah, no, I get it.
Our psychologist had a lot to do with that.
Well, and that's what it's about. I mean, and maybe we should even have her on sometime, because I think that would be kind of a neat little twist to what's going on here.
Yeah,
but possibly. But let's get back to it. And
so the second scene is Colony House in the sitting room. Victor is drawing Julie as she sleeps on the couch, and Julie wakes up and freaks out. Yeah. So yeah, Victor notices and says, you notice how sometimes you dream and you forget, but then later you start to remember and you realize that it wasn't a dream and all of it maybe really happened.
I know. It's just like so messed. Like,
oh my God, what's going on, right? So Julie looks at him with no idea how to respond to this upon just waking up, because remember, the only other time she met this guy, he just comes creeping into the kitchen looking for peaches, and they get
gonna have some peaches
personal space.
Right.
So, and he says, I think I'm starting to remember things that I thought were dreams. I made you a drawing. And he hands this to her while she looks at him like he's nuts. And he says, you can keep it if you want. He gets up and walks away. Like, it's just so strange. And she doesn't realize, let's see, Julie gets a big dose of Colony House. The first thing is modeling for Victor. The next thing is lessons on sharing with Trudy, which, you know, we're about to cover. So, you know, he leaves and she says, you know, she does the, oh my God, what just happened thing. And then Trudy comes over and says, good morning, sleepyhead. It's about time you woke up. Can I have my pillow back? And it's like, okay. Like when you're using something that you didn't realize that belonged to
right,
that you would have asked permission to use if you'd known. So Julie apologizes and says, someone just gave me this last night. I didn't realize. And Trudy's like, oh no, it's totally fine. I just want to take a nap, which makes me wonder what time of day it is. If Julie's just waking up and
well, what do they have to do? I mean, it's not like they're doing anything.
Well, and you know what? I do know someone that would get up early, go for a long run, come home, eat breakfast, and then take a nap. So she says, you can keep it if you want. And then, oh, wait a minute, that's the wrong one. So then she says, it's sort of like a security blanket for me. And then Julie apologizes again, and Trudy tells her not to worry about it. Me pillow, Sue pillow, or something. Her name's Meredith. And it just reminds me of me naming stuff that really has no reason to be named.
Well, everything should have a name that's important.
I feel like everything is important to me. Too
no,
important.
But you know, I love how they bring Trudy in. And again, yeah. I say this all the time. You don't want them to kill anybody, because they do such a great job with these
characters. Oh my God, actors on this show.
But it sucks, because if they don't kill somebody, you know.
But they could have found a red shirt for that episode that Trudy gets killed in. I think Trudy would have been a lot of fun. And you know what? She'd be even funner if she came back as a monster.
Oh, so my God.
Maybe that's in store for us. So
here's the line. Here's the line that she says. Bit.ly said it. It's on the screen. Things that matter to you should always have a name.
Yes. Trudy turns to go and says, you know, it's kind of funny. I have a shirt just like that. And Trudy says, oh, I know. I got this out of your suitcase. And I'm like, no, don't go in my stuff.
Like,
Julie is incredulous. Like she had said in the last episode, I don't want anyone going through my things, you know? And Trudy says, you don't mind, do you? We share everything here. And Julie's like, I guess not. And Trudy thanks her for taking care of Meredith and walks away. And Julie is wondering what she got herself into and wondering if maybe Colony House was...
isn't the place for her. Yeah. I want my mommy.
Yeah. Because, like, she's being thrown into, in a sense, well, a version of the grown-up world, you know, where everyone's treated kind of the same and casually, and they have this certain type of respect. So, let's see.
We'll be right back.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4/6 Success Filmmaking. 4/6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4/6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
Then that gets me is like, you have nothing. When you live at Colony House, it's like you have nothing. Everything can be taken away in a second and your life becomes something else. And like, because you share everything, there's just nothing. So on to the third scene, or did someone have something to say? Oh,
Bitly says, I think that there's a reference to the monsters knowing their names.
Oh, not here. Not here. Okay. So the third scene, and I think that's Bitey.
Oh, yeah. I that might be Bitey. Yeah, I might have said it wrong. Well, I titled this one particular section Wheelbarrow Frank. Because as we learned from Bob Mann, he actually had to make an appearance twice in this episode, one as a corpse and the other as a corpse with legs, or just legs.
Yeah. So now we're in the town outside the box, and Boyd brings a wheelbarrow. I hate saying that word. I want to say wheel barrel, but it's wheel barrow. Yes. Like, for years and years.
I thought it was barrel.
I know. Barrel makes sense. I'm going to have to look up the origin of how that came together. I mean, what the heck is a barrel? All right. You know what? If anyone that's watching can take a look at and see if there's a definition for the word barrow and let Alex know, that would be great. So Boyd brings a wheelbarrow with supplies to clean up the box and take care of Frank. Frank's gutted body is inside the box, main body intact. The legs are off. He's missing some fingers. Townspeople look on. And I love how they let Boyd do the heavy lifting there. They just watch, right? Boyd looks
over. Oh, I know. Like, nobody helps him. God forbid anybody helps him.
No one helps him. So Boyd looks over Frank, puts gloves on, and mentally prepares what he needs to do. For Boyd, this episode is about the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So I just felt that going through this episode with Boyd. The fourth scene is just the diner. Sarah enters to Mrs. Lou crying. And Mrs. Lou notices her and tries to dry her eyes and says something to her in Cantonese. Now, I just want to point out, this is the morning of day 3. So we're on day 3 of the Matthews being in town. I'm going to try and keep track. Oh, crap. I forgot to send you the music. At any rate.
That's okay.
The fifth scene is the Matthews house kitchen. And Tabitha is sitting with her head down on the table, with a cup of tea in front of her when Jim comes in, and Jim gently touches her head and Tabitha wakes up. She'd fallen asleep after making some tea, and Jim wants to open the curtains to let in some light, and she doesn't want him to yet. And she says, I used to love this time of the morning. Sometimes he'd stop crying just as the sun was coming up. It was like he was saying, and she cries, you've been up all night. My work is done. And I'm sure, you know, parents of young babies know that very well. she cries some more and Jim sits down and she asks if Jim thinks that they are being punished. She tells him that she's drinking tea out of a dead woman's mug in a place that can't possibly exist, in a house where another child died, and Julie's off doing God knows what. So she feels like her family is essentially just scattered to the wind. And I think she's thinking it's her fault. Ethan comes in asking if Tabitha is crying, and she tells him that she has a headache. Jim puts Ethan on his lap. Ethan misses Julie. Jim suggests that they go down to the diner and partake in the big community breakfast. Tabitha asks them to bring her something back while she unpacks and organizes, and Jim and Ethan go. So what I want to talk about here is, you know, Tabitha is wondering if they're being punished. And I have a note to myself to look back at last week's notes. And all right, so the difference between how Jim and Tabitha see things. And this is something they both kind of, all right, maybe I don't need to for E4. Oh, this is what it is. All right. The monsters for Jim is everything it was before Thomas died. And he can still hear it, see it, all of it. He's still there. He's stuck. And he's trying to figure out a way so that they don't end up like them, which is lost. Right. So, and she's just looking at it like, you know, we're in jail. You know, we've been sentenced and now here we are in jail. So the sixth scene, oh, does anyone have anything to say?
No, we're good.
All right. The sixth scene is back to the town outside of the box. And Boyd has Frank's body in the wheelbarrow with the same stupid townspeople looking on that could have helped. Boyd has blood on his clothes and he covers Frank up with some canvas, and Boyd starts pulling the wheelbarrow down the road. And all I hear is Monty Python.
Bring out your dead.
I remember, like, when I used to work in an office and I'd have to push this cart around every once in a while, I'd be going by the cubicles, bring out your dead. And someone always knew what I was talking about. But when
I'm not dead yet. I'll come back.
And I'd teach in high school and I would be pushing my science cart and I'd just say, bring out your dead. And I'm thinking they're high school kids. They're probably going to know what I'm talking about. No. Just Larry Ruskevich. And he responded with, and I lost it. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. You know? So anyway, that was Monty
Python. We're back to wheelbarrow Frank.
Seriously, what is with the townspeople just watching? He passes by the blue Subaru with what looks like New York plates. Boyd passes the Matthews house just as Jim and Ethan are coming out. And Ethan greets him, and Boyd turns his body so that Ethan can't see the front of his shirt because it's covered in blood. And Ethan asks where they're headed. Oh, wait a minute. Boyd asks where they're headed, and Jim says off to get breakfast and tries to hurry Ethan along. And then Ethan asks what's in the cart. Like, all the awkward adult moments.
Oh, it couldn't have gotten any worse. I love how Bitely's like, it's only a flesh wound.
Yeah, it's only a flesh wound.
And Vanessa, thank you for joining us as well. But, you know, it's just really funny how, you know, wheelbarrow. Now I'm like having a problem saying it.
I know. Has anyone gotten the definition yet?
No, I can look it up later. But okay. how he's caused so many problems just by being dead. I mean, you know, I know this is a very, you know, dramatic show. But I mean, if they put a laugh track to that one part of it, it would be pretty funny.
Yeah. So anyway, Ethan even asks if Boyd needs help, and he declines, saying he's taking supplies to Father Cottry and tells them to hurry because Mrs. Lou is very strict about breakfast. So now we get to the diner, and the jukebox starts playing The Last Train to Clarksville. And essentially the message is, I'm waiting there at the station, but you can't leave. Like, you are waiting for that last train that is never, ever coming. So that's the first song that we hear in this episode. And they have the
monkey. Oh, wait, we have an answer. Yeah. So Barrow is to bear or to carry.
So wheels that carry. So that's what that means. I would rather have barrel. Thank you.
Thank you for being our ChatGPT.
So Sarah greets them at the door and tells them that they were hoping to see them. Mrs. Liu likes to make something special for newcomers. Jim thanks her and they introduce themselves, and Sarah seats them and tells Ethan that she'll check and see if there's pancakes, because that's what they really want. Jim connects Mrs. Liu with her husband being killed the other night, and Sarah gets a little bit awkward.
Yeah,
really? Yeah, I mean, Sarah, awkward? Really?
You're killing me with the mic. You're like...
I don't even know where the mic is on this thing.
Oh, great.
So then we're back to the eighth scene, town, and it's outside. Boyd is pulling the cart down the street and arrives at the church. Cotri comes over and looks and comments about not being much left. I thought there was kind of, well, I guess Frank is just a shell of a man now. Yeah. Oh, my God. I just loved having Bob with us last week. Boyd tells Cotri to make sure that he's buried with his family, and Cotri asks if he's coming back for the service and asks if he feels better now. And Boyd tells him to bring back the cart when he's done. Boyd laughs and asks, you going to mention in your little service that you were the one that wanted him dead? So, you know, Cotri could have saved Frank. But Cotri had to be the voice of reason and say, if you let him go, then you're just saying there's no consequences for anything.
I really, you know what, in Boyd's defense, did he have to really die?
No, I don't think
I mean, really, what did he do that wrong? I know, a man protects his family, all this other stuff.
I mean, his wife could have nailed those windows down.
Exactly. I mean...
The only thing he didn't do right, or the only thing he did wrong, was that he was not there with his family and dying with them. You know?
So if he died with his family, he would have been a hero.
But, you know, with this, he's just not. So now we're going to this.
Yeah, but Bitely's like, they broke the window rule. He's not the only one that broke the rule. The wife broke the rule too.
No one nailed it down. She knew they had a kid in the house.
Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah.
I understand. Vanessa's like, he didn't nail it down. Well, you know what? So did she. She didn't nail it down.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's got a good point. Like,
there's enough fault to go around.
Yeah. You know? I guess we're just lucky that Megan didn't break the window. So, you know, playing or something. All right. So the ninth scene, and I've got to tell you, I really do enjoy the Kenny Jade. I love that Jade becomes a member of the Liu family eventually, but I love the interaction, and I love Jade sinking into the reality of this place. So they're back in the root cellar, the exterior. Kenny says that he knocks on the door for breakfast and asks what he's doing out there. And Jade tells Kenny that he wants to show him something, because Jade's already at the root cellar and Kenny comes walking up. Kenny tells him that it's empty. And Jade says, that's kind of the point. They go into the root cellar and Jade says, I thought it was a CGI party trick. There was this, they were right here. There was this weird fucking symbol right on the ceiling. And over here, right, this is where the body was. It was, this guy was right there. He was dead, right? And then fucking half crushed by this giant boulder thing. And then he starts screaming. And Kenny just looks at him like,
yeah, great.
You know, don't look at me like I'm fucking crazy, okay? I know what I saw. And you know what? I do the same thing. I'm like, I wake up every once in a great while and I'll wake up to a dog that is not mine in the bed with me. So at any rate, Kenny says, I'm not. It's just, look at the first couple of days. They can be really rough for everyone. And then Jade's like, no. It's like your brain can't really understand what's going on. And then listen, I wasn't hallucinating. Okay. Trust me. I've done a fuck ton of drugs. I know what hallucinations look like. I do too. Ever since my COVID vaccination, I know what they're like.
They're in the chat. They're still talking about the whole window thing. And I'm just going to leave it at this. You're right about the window. You're not. I'm not saying that you're wrong.
Everybody is right.
You know, if you don't punish the person with the broken one, then more rules will be broken.
Yeah.
But I love this one. You know, Rick explained the broken window rule on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I mean, and I get that. We're not blind to it. We're just saying that, you know, there's enough blame to go around. That was all my point. And we like Bob and, you know.
Love the Bob.
We just wanted more Bob.
Yeah, more Bob. So Jade says this was different. It was here and then it wasn't. I have a pretty healthy imagination. Okay. I mean, I built a software company based on nothing but imagination. But this, none of this. Kenny tries to listen to something he's heard before. There has got to be an explanation. And none of you fucking people seem to be looking for it.
Right.
So Kenny says, okay, why don't we go back to the sheriff's station? Okay.
I've got to bring the big guns in.
Come on. So Kenny turns for the stairs and turns out the light. Come on. And he wants to show them around the house in town where the, oh, wait a minute. That's a leftover line. Darn it. I had some problems with this time for some reason. Anyway, now the 10th scene, we are in the diner. And it's inside. Mrs. Lou comes out of the kitchen smiling and holding a plate of pancakes and sets them in front of an appreciative Ethan. And Jim tells Ethan to thank her. And Mrs. Lou asks what Jim wants. And he says he'll just take some of Ethan's pancakes. Mrs. Lou puts her hand on his shoulder and it looks like it makes Jim feel safe. I love the way she touched him. That was just really nice.
Oh, she's the best.
Oh, God, both those Liz's. Ethan says that they are good. Jim says, see, not everything here is so bad. And Ethan asks if they live here, if they live there now. And Jim is like, no. We are just here for a little bit. Think of it like a vacation.
Really? Oh, yeah. It's a big time vacation.
Yeah. Ethan replies, and this is it. This is the line. Oh, my God. Yes, I do want. You know what? I want Bickfords. Anyone from my area of Massachusetts would know what I'm talking about. Bickfords. Better than IHOP. But IHOP's okay too. Anyway, let's see. Ethan says, I think it's probably a quest. Like a hero's quest. Like Norman, go on to the Lake of Tears. We probably have to save somebody if we want to go home. Yes, Vanessa.
A vacation from hell, Vanessa said.
That's what Norman had to do. Jim says, yeah, you might be onto something there. And I love how Jim is like, he's a supportive parent instead of being like, no, this is nothing like that. Instead, he gives Ethan the freedom to think a little bit, you know? So Ethan says Ethan now has his own file.
The quest file.
Yep.
The quest file.
I ran out of ink, but I've got to get that file set up because I've started taking notes and there's stuff.
Dun.
Yeah. So Ethan says, you know, sometimes I pretend that's where Thomas went. Now, Jim is having a tough time already. And Jim says, what? And Jim is like getting an idea of what Ethan has been thinking about Thomas's death, because, you know, a lot of times grownups will try to shield, you know, younger kids from the realities of life. And sorry, I thought I turned that off. But Ethan continues that he's on a magical quest, and if I try, I can help him save the kingdom. And Jim just looks at him and he's like, is that right? And they look at each other and you can see that Jim is visibly shaken and that he has to get up and go to the restroom. So this is where Ethan first talks about where they are and how this is a quest. And we probably have to save somebody if we want to go home. So I have some broader thoughts on the entire show, because I was like, what if everyone is on their own kind of quest?
And well, wait, I have a question. Because Thomas, he brings up Thomas and he brings up the Lake of Tears.
Yeah.
And I really think that, I think that's the first time he said, we've heard the term Lake of Tears in the show.
No. The first episode.
Oh, okay. Was he the one that brought it up, or was somebody else?
No, Julie says it when she's doing the finger
puppets. That's it. I knew. Okay, yeah, the finger puppets. Yeah.
And then last night around like 2-3 o'clock, Crominacle on Instagram is messaging me about it. And I'm like, I would love to talk about this, but I was doing a mega binge of The Pacific. It was up till like 4 this morning watching that.
My point is there's something, there's got to be a connection with that lake and
that body of water.
Yeah, that body of water, because, you know, we've seen too much of it in the show for it not to be something important.
Right. So this is what I started writing down. The question is, do they all have their own quests? Jade, this place is the ultimate puzzle. Like, he has to solve this puzzle. Jim and Tabitha have to accept the loss of their child and start living in the same world, because right now they are not living in the same world as each other. Ethan, this was interesting, and it comes up later on in this episode, but Ethan is the second chosen one, and Victor was the first. So I'm going to come back to that later when we actually get there. All right, so we go from the diner table to the restroom, and Jim is just in there emotionally losing it. And it's like, you know, when you want to hug a character and you can't do it, you know?
Yeah, he was having a hard time.
Yeah, like he has been strong through this whole thing. And, you know, on day 3, he's starting to break down.
Well, we all have our moments. And we saw, you know, we saw that with a bunch of characters. So
yeah,
we all have our ups and downs.
Yeah. So there's a quick little scene in the 12th scene where Tabitha is unpacking and she pulls out this, I don't know what color, burgundy sweater, purpley kind of sweater. And then we go to the 13th scene. And this scene is important. And Ethan is sitting alone at the table because Jim is in the restroom. And in comes Victor, and he just says 4 inches. And Ethan's like, what? The trees, they moved 4 inches. Ethan asks, is that good or bad? And Victor sits down in the booth and he says, they're close, so it's bad. And so that just kind of makes you think the world is shrinking.
Right, right. No, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So Ethan said, should we tell somebody? And Victor's like, oh, I don't think they'll understand. because here we got two little boys dealing with the world of grown-ups.
And the sad part is, no, I didn't mean to stop you, but
that's right.
You know, one of the biggest criticisms that we've both had about this is if everybody just sat down and laid their cards out, they'd get to the problem a lot quicker or the solution.
I really want to see a scene like that. I really do. I really want to see a scene like that.
It's almost like they're doing a reading, but not, you know?
Yeah. So, Ethan says, should we tell somebody? And Victor's like, well, I don't think they'll understand. He pulls something out of his pocket and he says, there's something I need to show you, something very important. You remember the boy that you were talking about, the one that lives outside? And then he hands him the crayon picture and he says, is that him? And Victor slides over one of his crayon drawings, the one of the boy in white with the trees behind him. Ethan picks it up and looks and asks, who drew this? Victor says, I did. But it's in crayon. So you're a grown up.
Yeah.
And Victor's like, is it him or not? And it was so interesting. It's like, you know, a real picture. But what else is Victor going to show him, right?
Right.
So Ethan's like, that's him, and gives the drawing back and asks what's wrong. And Victor says that means that he's real. Victor had no idea.
Right. Well, because the only time he's ever seen him is by himself. So
he
doesn't know what the hell's going on.
So Jim is returning from the restroom and he sees Victor sitting there and he's like, hey. And Ethan's like, it's okay, Dad. And Victor mumbles and folds up the drawing and Jim reaches for it and he's like, let me see that. And Victor's like, I'm sorry. And Jim's like, hold on. I wasn't. Hold on. What is this? What are you doing? Excuse me. Jim reaches out and grabs Victor and pushes him to the door. And Ethan yells, Dad, stop.
I just don't understand why he was like trying to be about Victor. Like it just made no sense to me.
Why he went after Victor?
Yeah, it just seems like he went after him several times in the episode, and it's like he doesn't know really Victor. And yes, I understand what you're saying, but you know, you're in a new place. I don't know. I think Jim was all wrong too, just like Vanessa said.
Yeah, Jim, I think if it was in the real world, his overreaction or his reaction would not have been an overreaction. But here he is in this weird, wacko place. And this guy is kind of weird and he doesn't know him. And why is he showing my kid crayon pictures? I mean, to a parent, you got to admit, Alex, if it was you.
No, I get it. I know. I see where you're coming from. But, you know, there's also monsters at night. So, I mean.
Well, that's the whole thing. I think, you know, there's a couple things going on there. You know, Jim is going to be overprotective of his kids. And Julie is off in another house that, you know, he doesn't know what she's doing. So he's going to be overprotective of the kids. But also, like, he cannot risk losing another child.
You know, what's kind of interesting. That's Victor's a colony house person. And he walked all the way down to the town.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if a lot of people do. It seems
I think they do.
I don't know.
I mean, they have food up at Colony House, so they wouldn't have to leave. But maybe if they want something special, they go down there.
They go to the supermarket. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. So, you know, Jim is just like, you know, Victor's like, I would never do anything. And Jim is just like, you stay away from my kid.
No, I mean, I understand. He's just being a Papa Bear.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. You know, but like Vanessa said, it seemed a little overkill, overacted, whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
I think I wish Jim didn't do it, but I think it was okay. I thought it fit. So the 14th scene brings us to Colony House interior. Julie sits at the window thinking and looks like she's crying. Fatima comes to her. There you are. I've been looking everywhere for you. What's wrong? I think maybe I made a mistake. It was hard for me too at first. Tell you a secret. It helped once I figured out how to get my clothes back from Trudy. Ha ha ha. How'd you know? She's wearing a new t-shirt, and I know she didn't order that online. So, come on, and they walk away. So back at the Matthews house, Jim and Ethan return. Jim tells Ethan, take it easy on that leg, or you're going to pop a stitch. And Ethan says, you shouldn't have done that. Victor's my friend. And he sits down and opens his book, and Jim's like, look, I'm sorry. Just leave me alone! All right, so Jim feels bad, and he goes outside. The next scene is the exterior, and it is Julie and Fatima, and they're doing laundry.
Right. And then the mom comes, Tabitha.
Right. And the gist of it is, this is the job you want to have in the house, so that if you see something super cool, like this shirt, it's this Armani shirt. It belonged to this guy, Charlie from Duluth.
The crossdresser.
Oh God. He was this amazing crossdresser. Oh, he was so beautiful and funny. Anyway, then when the story doesn't get finished, and then Trudy got her hands on it and just kept trying to hide it. But the point is that if you're doing laundry, you can keep an eye on your stuff a lot easier.
Right.
So Tabitha comes up and she holds up a sweater and says, well, I found your sweater in my bag and we miss you. Julie has a stone face on with her arms crossed. I miss you guys too. So she's not willing to give any inches at this particular moment. And Tabitha smiles. Then come back with me. Honey, this is not a prison. You can leave whenever you want. We'll talk to Donna about, you made a mistake and that you changed your mind.
And then the teenager comes back out and she's like, no.
Yeah. They end up having a little bit of a fight, and Julie protests, asking why Tabitha always does that, making it seem like poor, stupid Julie doesn't understand what she's doing and that everything will just be okay once I admit I was wrong. Like I always do. And the thing about it is that there is this pattern that families, friends, whatever, tend to fall into, where they're reading from the same script over and over again. And it's hard to find change, within these relationships. When you read from the same script, you say the same lines over and over and you get the same result. And Tabitha's like, Julie, we have no idea where we are, how we got here. We have to stick together as a family. And Julie's like, are you kidding me? You're seriously going to stand there and lecture me about family? I knew that you and Dad were planning. I knew all about the divorce and how this whole trip was just like one last hurrah before you sat us down to break the news. So stop treating me like a child. And Tabitha tells her that she's right, and that she and Jim love each other, and they love Ethan and her very much. And Julie says, Thomas is dead, and I know that's hard, and I know that you lost, but we all lost. You have two other kids. Why aren't we enough for you? And this has come up before in families. Like, this is not a new thing. And parents, I can understand how parents get a little stuck grieving over the child that they lost. Like, they made a kid. I can't imagine making anything more precious and then to have it taken away. It's heartbreaking. But then it's the grieving is to the detriment of the children that remain often. And those, the remaining kids feel like they're forgotten, that they don't matter, that they weren't enough. And so Tabitha just says, it's not that simple. And she's right. It's a very complex issue. But when you're the kid, the surviving kid, it's pretty simple to you. So,
No, but I mean, I'm with you 1,000%. I think that, you know, I'm along the lines of what Vanessa was saying, that Julie's just being mean. And I felt that way when I first saw this. I really thought she was just being a mean teenager or whatever. And there is a little bit of that. But, you know, she's also smart enough to know what's going on. She's not 12. She's 16.
Right.
You know, and she's in high school. So she knows the deal. And I'm with you, Vanessa. She is mean, but, you know, her parents aren't playing fair either.
I have a hard time calling her mean. We know that the baby died.
Well, no, she was a bitch in the first couple of episodes.
I know, but I'm just saying her attitude sucks, but there's a reason behind it.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, there's definitely.
This happened a year and a half ago. So she was like 14 and a half years old, and now she's 16. And so, like, those are, you know, very big formative years, and she's gone through this tragic death in her house. And it's not just that, it's that her parents are kind of lost, and now they're talking about divorce, so their family is going to be destroyed even further. I feel like that's her armor, you know, like, if she was nice, the story wouldn't be as interesting. But I just see, you know, this hurt.
Oh, no, but then she has room to grow. I mean, we love Julie. Yeah. And you know, Vanessa also put, you know, Julie and Ethan will never be enough to replace Thomas. Absolutely. No, you can't replace the kid. The problem is that, you know, grieving, unfortunately, is a process, and people grieve at different rates. And
right.
The fact is, Julie and Ethan are still grieving just as much as the rest of the family. It's just that they're the ones that are being discarded or not being as loved because of Thomas's passing. And there's a lot to be said. I mean, this isn't this is a common thing that happens. I mean, a lot of times, you know, parents that have special needs kids, when there is a death in the family, when there's a child, there's a high rate of divorce.
Right.
So this is not a uncommon trope, so to speak. But
no.
That said, let's just face it. She was being a bitch at that point. I'm saying at the clothesline, and she had every right to. I'm not defending. I mean, I'm defending the fact that she had every right to be, but she was. I mean, she wasn't making it easy. And the only reason she decided to do that was, you know, her mom basically said, I understand you made a mistake. We're going to fix this because you made a mistake. And if she didn't say that, she might have actually got her back. She said, you know, if she had said it a different way, it could have gone a different way.
I agree. I think that's exactly where Tabitha misstepped. But to just end this, I just see four people grieving in four very different ways. And so, and you know, we're seeing all four of these ways in this episode. So the 17th scene, and I like this scene too. This is in the sheriff's office, the interior. One of the reasons why I like this is if you stop the scene just at the right moment, you get a very good, clear picture of the map. And I took a picture and I have it on my phone. And Chromanocle sent me a picture of that too. And showing me the Lake of Tears is on that near Detroit. Are you talking to me? Because I can't hear you.
It would help if I unmuted. If you send that to me, I might be able to push it up on the interwebs.
I will send it right this second. So, Mr. Alex Baelish, in care of... Oh, wow, what's that? Here's the map. I thought I turned it sideways. Or turned it the right way. But anyway, I just sent you the map. So there's a map of the United States with pins in it. And Jade is like, what the fuck is this? And Kenny's like, this, near as we could guess, and he points to northern Florida, just above Orlando, is where you and your friend were driving when you reached the tree. But the RV that the family came in, they were driving here. And he points to, it's just about Phoenix, Arizona. I think it's like slightly above Phoenix. Me and my parents were in Austin, Texas. Christy, the medic, she was in Detroit. Every single one of these pins is a different resident who drove in from a different location. Yet somehow we all ended up here. I love this. This is an important piece of exposition. I'm keeping notes of where people, like the order of when people get there and where people are from. So far on the arrival list, and it goes from latest to longest, we've just got the Matthews and Jaden Toby. Then it, you know, Donna, because that's when she told us when she arrived. Jade snorts. I love this. And he's like, oh my God. When I was at the con this weekend, there was this girl that comes over and starts talking to the guy next to me. And she was like, she kept snorting. She's like, I can't even snort. She'd snort and then say something and then snort and then say something. I'm like, that is bizarre. But anyway, Jade snorts. That is fucking impossible. Kenny agrees. Jade laughs. Yeah, okay, all right. See, that's the difference between you and me. I don't do impossible. I don't just sit around accepting the world as it is. I pick up a desk lamp. Oh, not I. He picks up a desk lamp with a globe on it. And he says, someone is doing this and I am not going to rest until I figure it out. So Kenny is like, well, then you're going to lose your mind, okay? Because that's what happens to people who can't adapt. They bend. They can't bend, so eventually they break. Jade, look, every new person who comes here just assumes that it's just the monsters they have to be afraid of. But that's not the hardest part. It's what this place does to you, what it makes you think and feel, what it makes you question about every single thing that you think you know. And if you can't, if you, static hisses from the CB radio, because Kenny's still sitting right in front of the map, and Jade is like a desk, like it's like Boyd's desk, a space, and then Kenny's desk, and he's like standing between the desks where he picked up the globe lamp, and the static hisses from the radio. And this it excites the electrons in Jade's brain. He looks at it and Kenny just dismisses it, and he's like, yeah, that happens sometimes. Look, I'm just trying to tell you. If you can't understand that, Jade runs from where he's standing and he grabs the radio and he grabs all the pieces parts. And then Kenny's like, what are you, wait, what are we going? And Jade is like this with the radio and runs out. The radio is the first thing that shows him that something is going on. It shows him, like, it tells him, all right, this gives me a clue. This gives me a known. The radio intermittently hisses. And when you're trying to solve equations, you fill in everything that you know and then work on solving for the unknown.
A couple things in the chat. You know, first off, yes, there is something in Kenny's globe. Which we find out later.
Yeah.
And there is a high res picture of the map, evidently, MGM released one.
Oh, really?
But we'll have to find that out. I do want to go back.
Is this the one I sent you, or
that's
is it
the one you sent me? That's the one you sent me.
Wow, that looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to go like this with it.
I know.
So, all right.
The bottom line is they're really starting to bond together, and you know, Jade, this is where you're still not. I still didn't like Jade at first. I mean, we didn't.
We didn't like him yet.
I mean, he was just a pain in the ass. He's probably a red shirt kind of thing.
He was just a self-centered SOB.
Right.
We didn't like him yet.
And you know, I mean, like, really, you're the first person that decided, oh, I want to figure out how to get out of here. Like, you're the one.
No, you know? Yeah, no, I know. Everyone has tried to figure it out. Like, I couldn't imagine being in a place like that and just accepting it. Like, I don't know. I'm always trying to figure something out. Like, there's got to be an answer to this. So, anyway.
He also said that there's right above your head on the map. It says Norman.
Yeah, that's what Krominacle sent me last night.
Right. So, I just love that relationship, and I love that they're really starting to bond. And yeah. I mean, they're, for lack of a better term.
Yeah,
but
it's not the right term, but it's the term we have, I think. All right, so the scene 18. This is super important. And I loved what they did with this. This is the Matthews house exterior porch. Jim is sitting on the steps looking at Victor's crayon drawing that he showed Ethan. Tabitha returns from Colony House and Jim folds up the picture. Tabitha says, "Well, you look how I feel." Jim tells her that Ethan is mad at him and she asks why. And he's like, "I thought you were going to unpack." So he deflects with that, and Tabitha says, "I was, but I went to see Julie," and Jim asks how it went, and she says, "Well, about what you'd expect. And Tabitha tells him that Julie knows about the divorce. Jim says to Tabitha, and this is what pisses her off, he says, "Everything is going to be okay." She tells him to stop saying that, and he says, "What do you want me to say?" And she says she doesn't know. So this is one of the issues that they are having. Jim's confidence, or Jim's way of being, is he's got the engineer's confidence, just like Jade has. You see a problem, you figure out the knowns, and then you go after the unknowns. So Jim is like, his confidence is actually his fear, his brand of engineer fear. Everything is broken, so figure out how to fix it, and everything will be okay. Like, that's all he's got to do. The problem is that Jim knows that he is broken, and he can't engineer himself out of it. Let's see. The next thing is Tabitha is like, "You're hurt, that you're scared. This is also fucked that you have no idea what to do, because I am walking around reminding myself to breathe. And every time you talk about how things are going to be okay, it makes the rest of us feel like we're doing something wrong." And he yells, "That's not fair." And she responds, "Fair? Right. I'm sorry. What part of the last 14 months have been fair?" So this is 18. Okay. So let me go to the next thing. Where did I leave off? Oh.
Now you're at the box where Boyd and Father Cotri have their little...
No. I'm not even close to being there. There's more going on.
Oh, well, they're arguing. Victor decides to show up and...
Right. So inside, Ethan's moving around the house. And Jim says, I'm trying to keep a grip on things here. It's not going to do us any good if we get hysterical. Ethan grabs an apple. Tabitha's like, no, you don't get to do that. Ethan hears them. I'm not being hysterical. Knocking on glass, Ethan turns. We wouldn't be here if we hadn't. I went backwards. If we hadn't. How do I turn this?
I don't know.
All right.
Now, well, while you're trying to figure that out, I just want to mention to people.
Oh, I've got it right.
We're going over season one, episode four, of From on our From rewatch. It's a Rock and a Far Away, which hopefully we'll get Far Away.
We're moving right along.
All right, here we go. What you were saying about Victor.
Yeah. So Victor knocks on the glass, Ethan turns, and then Tabitha says, we wouldn't even be here. And Jim says, what? And Victor waves at Ethan, even though he's right there. I mean, that's such a little kid thing to do. Victor's at the window knocking softly. Tabitha says, just forget it. Ethan walks towards the window. Jim is like, go ahead and say it. Say it to my face. Tabitha says, what was this trip supposed to do, Jim? Victor points to the back door. Tabitha, that we were going to go camping for a few days. Ethan walks to the door. Tabitha says, and everything would just magically get better. Victor steps down from an old kitchen chair that's outside and meets Ethan at the back door. And Jim says, I'm sorry. I just wasn't ready to cut and run. So the argument continues. So you can hear them going back and forth. And Victor says, hi. Ethan asks what he's doing out there. And Victor says, we got to find him. And Ethan's like, the boy? And he's like, yeah, I mean, he's been gone a long time. And he puts a hand out to help Ethan down the stairs. And we need to ask him why he's back. And Ethan says, I'm not supposed to leave. Oh, but you have to, because he chose you, just like he chose me once.
Yeah, that doesn't sound creepy when you put it that way.
No, I know, but like, it makes sense because the guy on the quest or the person on the quest is always chosen by something. So,
no, I get it.
So the mythical creature, the boy in white, had chosen Victor. Victor couldn't complete the quest. So the circumstances repeat themselves because when everything went wrong, it was the day the two cars showed up, and then Victor wakes up the next morning and everyone's dead.
And all hell breaks loose. Yeah. Yeah. Now, when he even said that to Ethan, you know, that happened a long time ago. And I just wanted to also welcome Kelly. She had said hi. She's one of our Zed heads.
Oh, nice.
And she's a Dead by Daylighter. That's who I play Dead by Daylight with.
Oh, okay.
And she's like awesome. But yeah, so then they decide to go and walk in the forest, right?
Yeah. So, but the important thing is like Ethan's coming down the steps with his crutch and,
yeah, that was nice. That was a good scene.
Victor says, you can't take that with you, meaning the crutch. And then Victor's and Ethan's like, why? And he's like, they're no good. He gives it to Ethan. Those are for hospitals. These are for quests. And he gives him this stick and Victor says, Ethan says, don't you need one? And Victor is like, I got this. And so off we go. Now, here's this really big scene. And this is back in town at the box. And Boyd is fixing the box as Father Cotri approaches with the wheelbarrow. Cotri says, you know, if you need to say shitty things to me in order to feel better about what happened, fine. I'm not having this conversation. Okay, in that case, you're getting a sermon.
I love that.
Psalm 23 from the book of Cut the Self-Pitying Bullshit and Be a Leader. Look, what happened to Lauren and Megan, it wasn't your fault. Frank putting himself in this box wasn't your fault. None of this is really about them, is it, Boyd? Boyd stops working and points his waving finger. You're going to want to be very careful about what you say next. And Cotri says, or what? You can't keep punishing yourself, Boyd. She wouldn't have wanted that. And this pushes Boyd's buttons. And he's like, hey, hey, you're way the fuck out of line. You hear me? Way the fuck out of line. He puts his finger in Khatri's face and turns back to his work. And Khatri says, before you got here, I was burying more people in a week than you'd see die in the last 2 years. Victor works, not Victor, Boyd works seemingly not to listen, but you were the one that found the talismans. You created order from chaos. You made it possible for people here to live again, not just survive. You saved this town, Boyd. But the price you paid, I can still see her face when I close my eyes. Boyd starts to push back and walks towards Khatri. Khatri continues, I can't even imagine what it must be like for you. And I wish that you had the luxury of grief, but you don't, Boyd. These people need you.
Right.
We 3 months without a single death, and there's been 6 in the last 3 days. So Lauren, Megan, Toby, Mr. Lou, Gina, and Frank. People are scared, okay? The edges are starting to fray. You need to be the one to tell them it's going to be okay. Look, you want to use me as a punching bag? You need a place to put all your anger, all those regrets? Fine. But they need you to be strong, to hold this place together. You need to be the one to lead these people home. Because if you don't, she died for nothing. So Boyd goes back to hammering. Khatri backs away. And that's where the sermon ends. Khatri leaves. And Boyd turns to get something out of his toolbox, but his wrist is bothering him. Like he does this thing. It's the first time we see him do this. So the thing that I just noticed while I was reading this is that before you got here, I was burying more people in a week than you'd see died in the last 2 years. Does that mean Victor's been, not, does that mean Boyd has been there for 2 years? So that's a question I need. I don't have a pencil. Oh, I have a pencil. That's a question. Has Boyd been there for 2 years? For 2 years. Because I'm thinking about the order of arrival. For some reason, I didn't think he'd been there all that long. But I know we'll get to the Victor episode, the Boyd episode. So, all right. So now we're in the forest. And Victor and Ethan are walking in the forest. And Victor says, it's been so long since he went away, I started to think it was just a dream. The first time I saw him was right before the two cars came. Not your two cars, the first two cars. What scene number? This is scene number 20.
I'm talking. I'm like, it's scene 20 and one problem. I was muted.
Oh, I didn't hear you.
No, that's why, because I was muted.
Yeah. What did you want to say, my dear?
No, I was going to say it's scene 20.
Yeah, it's scene 20. I highlighted this because I'm jumping forward to the episode when Victor says, when he's talking about the pictures and he has the revelation that he thought he was dreaming everything in the pictures. And now what he realizes is that he drew the pictures so he could remember what had happened. So like when he is frantically up in his room looking for the pictures and, you know, he finds a picture of the dog and he finds a picture of the boy in white. I think like he's realizing that these things are real. And it was Ethan saying, I saw this boy in white that lives out, you know, in these little woods, and it jogged something for Victor. And so Ethan asked, when was that? And Victor's like, oh, it's been a while. I wasn't much older than you when they came. You've been here a pretty long time, huh? I've been here the longest. for a long time. There was nobody else here but me. How did you get here? We shouldn't talk about that. And then Ethan asks, what happened to your parents? And Victor says, I just said we shouldn't talk about it.
Right, right.
And I'm relieved because, like, you know, we've heard that initially Victor wasn't going to make it out of this season. He was going to die in this season. So it makes me wonder if we would have found out what happened to his parents. At least we know what happened to his mom.
Right.
Or we know his mom was there with him. So Ethan says, sorry, I used to have a little brother. His name is Thomas. He died when he was a baby. And then Victor's like, why'd you tell me that? And Ethan's like, because we're friends.
Plus, he's got nothing else to talk about.
Well, yeah. And Ethan is trying to say, I understand what you're feeling because I've lost my little brother. And Victor is in emotional upheaval now because he's figuring out that all these drawings actually happened. And yeah, he does need to talk about it. But
he needs to more than talk about it. He needs to do all sorts. You know, Alma, who just showed up, one of our others.
Alma! That has, that's damn boy in white.
Damn, we're going to find him for you, and we're going to beat the crap out of him just for you.
No, no, no. So they hear twigs snap, and Victor sees the boy in white walking in the woods. The thing about it, when Ethan saw the boy in white and then told Victor about it, it made me wonder if Victor would be able to see the boy in white as an adult. But we get that answer here. He sees the boy in white walking in the woods. And Victor pulls Ethan behind some trees and points out the boy in white. But we don't know that Ethan actually saw him then. And then Victor says they have to go, which I kind of don't understand why they have to go if they were out there looking for the boy in white. And then in the Matthews home, they come in, Jim and Tabitha come in. Tabitha comes in flustered from her argument with Jim and starts back to working on the luggage. And Jim comes in flustered also. And he asks if they can figure things out. And she says she can't do it right now. And she says, I'm going to take Ethan up to see Julie and we'll talk later. And she starts calling for Ethan. And that's when they find out that Ethan's not in the house. So we're back in the forest and Ethan says, where did he go? So I guess that's my answer. He did see him. And then Victor says, look, it's a faraway tree. And so we see the tree with the big hole in it. And Victor, Ethan asks what it is, and Victor tells him to watch. So he picks up a rock, pulls a piece of chalk, and I'm like, I have my jean jacket that I've been wearing a lot, and I remember wearing it when I was working on this show called Delilah in North Carolina, and I have this big stick of chalk that's in my coat pocket, so I can't really make fun of Victor having chalk in his pocket. So he draws a smiley face on the rock, goes over and drops it into the tree. And then like a couple seconds later, it drops out behind them. And Ethan wants to know how the tree does it, but Victor doesn't know. And he tells him that it works for people too. But the problem is that you never know where you're going to end up. It could be somewhere close. It could be somewhere far. Or it could be that you end up stuck inside a mountain somewhere. And that, maybe they already knew and not that they had written the script, but it seemed like Boyd had kind of ended up in a mountain, like inside a mountain when he shows up with Martin.
Right.
Oh my God. You know what? I've been watching this whole time and it's like watching Creature Double Feature with the Japanese Godzilla movies because I hear your voice and then your mouth moves.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's just, it's hard to not laugh. It is what it is.
So Alma doesn't want me to beat up anybody.
Okay.
Especially the boy in white. Well, listen, he started the violence. He pushed Tabitha out the window.
That didn't start the violence. That didn't start it. He shows up.
No, I'm just saying he started it. It's just another unanswered mystery that's driving me crazy for both seasons. We didn't even see him last season. I know it was really weird. We were waiting, and then he comes to the last scene and pushes poor Tabitha. And
that was a big scene. That was a big scene, though.
I mean, it was a big scene for, you know,
for the two seconds
that he was there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I just wanted to, you know, say it is a mystery, and it's going to be interesting to see what his real role is. Is he good or bad, or is he playing both? Is he the entity that is above the monsters? You know, I keep talking about that.
Is he a hologram?
What is he? You know, nobody's actually touched him.
No.
So,
although he was able to push Tabitha out.
True. That is true.
So, he tells Ethan that there's a bunch of trees, but he hasn't seen this one before. And then Victor starts hearing a dog barking, like the echoes, and it's coming from the tree, and he covers his ears and he says no. And then we get the flashback to Victor as a boy about Ethan's age, and there's a German shepherd is barking while it stands over a bloodied and mutilated body. And from one of the scenes, it's like the dog is standing between the upper and lower halves of a body. Ethan asks what's wrong, as he can't hear the dog. And then we get another shot of the town street years ago when Victor was a boy, and the mutilated bodies going all down the street. And the boy in white is on the merry-go-round. I looked up the name of that piece of playground equipment, and it is called a merry-go-round. It's driving me nuts. And we see Victor as a boy. Wait a minute. Yeah, and it's just flashes. Victor tells Ethan that they have to go. Jim and Tabitha are now in the woods with the crutch calling for Ethan. A German shepherd dog all of a sudden shows up in front of Jim, and then there's one behind Tabitha, and there seems to be several around them, and they're barking. And and then a gunshot rings out, and the dogs run. Victor has his arm raised with a gun in his hand. And Jim says, "What?" And Victor waves at Ethan, even though he's right there. What the heck is with me turning pages? Sorry.
I can hear him. It's
going backwards. And then Tabitha and Jim see Ethan, and Jim is incensed to see Victor there. He advances toward Victor, saying that he warned him, and Victor raises the gun in his defense. To me, Victor with a gun in his hand was like, it was horrific, Vanessa. It just didn't fit. Like, Victor with a gun in his hand looked...
Well, you would never would have imagined the guy that was looking for peaches has a six-shooter in his lunchbox.
I mean, I can see him having picked up a gun laying around town, but it looked so unnatural in his hand. It didn't look right to me at all. And Victor is like saying, I'm not a bad person. I would never hurt anybody. And Ethan is like, you know, leave him alone, Dad. And, you know, Victor says he's sorry, and he goes. So then we're at Colony House, the interior, and this is Victor's room in the attic. And Victor is frantically sorting through all the drawings and stops when he finds the one of the German shepherd. And he flashes back to the dog barking in the street. And the boy in white is standing near the yellow scout amidst the mutilated bodies. But the boy looks pissed. He's not smiling or anything. He just kind of looks mad to me. And Victor continues looking through the drawings and then finds what he's looking for. And he gasps. And it's back to the scene in the street. All the cars are 1960s models. At the post office, which is now the sheriff's office, there's a mutilated body by the flagpole, and there's an old car. Three bodies before the playground. The car in front of the post office is a 1962 Ford Falcon, possibly. In the post office parking is a gold Chevelle. I think it's like a 1970, but it's definitely not a 442 or a Cutlass Oldsmobile. There might be another by the trunk. I think maybe a 68. Okay, that doesn't make sense. Then you see the Matthews house, and there's bodies in the street and the yard. At the diner is another old car. It's a sedan. It might be a 68 Falcon. And then further down the is the church. Coming back up on the opposite side, we have the church with a white Volkswagen Bug in front of the house next to the church. There's a bunch of bodies there. The second house, we're coming back up towards Victor. I think it was a Ford LTD. And that was like a 1968. Then a yellow 68 Ford Scout just before the Colony Road. And the reason why I was looking up the cars is because I wanted to get an idea for about what year it is. So
yeah, no, it makes sense. Because, you know, the cars really do have a relationship to when they showed up.
Right, exactly.
I mean, with the exception of, you know, the oddball, you know, antique car, but most of these cars should be to the time of when they're
right
landing in from.
Right. And we've got the oldest car I see is a 1970. Like the gold Chevelle could be a 1970. But I don't know. I don't think it was a 68. So that's the problem. The other issue is that disco hadn't come out yet. In 1970, we weren't doing disco. That was the later 70s. And these cars are all like, you know, 60s. And there's two Ford Falcons, which...
Well, it says, yeah, beginning of the 70s. End of the 80s.
What says that?
The Google.
Oh. What'd you look up?
I looked up when was disco popular?
Oh, it's yeah.
70s, it was, end of 80s.
Yeah, because it was the late 70s, and as the late 70s and disco was, you know, was out, punk rock was starting to take form, and then new wave. And new wave was my thing. And that was the very early 80s, like 81, 82, that sort of thing. All right, John Travolta.
Sorry, I had to get my something on.
So it's a little bit confusing where we have all these 1960s, late model 60s cars. And he's carrying something from like, say, 1977, 1978. And I'm looking at the cars, and they call those, like, it, you know, when you're working on set, those are called picture cars. And okay. I thought it was a company when I first started working in the film industry, but they're just called picture cars. And I'm like, they might hire them from individual owners. And I was like, someone collects Ford Falcons.
No, you want to hear something really funny about that. So a good friend of mine has some antique ambulances. And he gets a phone call years ago from this company. It turns out, if you watch the Malcolm X story that... X.
Denzel Washington.
Yeah. Spike Lee rented his car for a couple of days. And when Denzel Washington gets shot, they put him into that ambulance.
Oh, that's interesting.
What's that?
The value of that car went up
a little bit, but you know, I mean, that's what's kind of neat about that kind of stuff. And I just happen to, you know, be privy to that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I know. I love knowing little things like that. So then Sarah, we get to Sarah and Nathan's house, which is about where Victor is standing. And there's bodies, you know, in the yard and on the street. Back to Victor watching the boy in white walk away, because the boy turns and he starts walking, and the dog doesn't stop barking, and the dog starts running towards the boy in white and then crosses in front of the boy in white towards the Matthews house and just runs off. And Victor follows the boy in white. The boy in white goes into the yard and gets on the merry-go-round. As Victor watches, the boy in white hops on a seat and waves at Victor, and Victor waves back. I mean, it's just, if you think about it, it's like all these dead bodies laying all over the place. And the boy is like, you know, and then Victor, and then the boy in white waves for Victor to follow him and then disappears. There's a dead body leaning up against the porch. And then we go to present time, and Victor is watching the merry-go-round spin, and we see the view the young Victor had with the merry-go-round spinning and the dead body against the porch, back to grown-up Victor watching the merry-go-round spin, and its rusted and broken-down school bus is behind him.
Right.
So at some point, that bus had showed up. And then there's a picture of the dog, the boy in white picture, because Victor is hanging them on his door. So he hangs the picture of the dog, the boy in white picture, a faraway tree, and the picture of the street that day. And Victor is upset because he's realizing that things that he thought he dreamed were actually real. We are getting close to the end. So then we have the town in the box, and Jim goes to see Boyd, and basically he talks about, he's letting Boyd know that he thinks there's a problem with Victor in regards.
Right. To- yeah. I mean, he's basically, I'll talk to Donna, you know, Ellis is there. And again, you know, it's really easy for him to say all this, but the fact is, Jim, to your point, has no frigging clue what's going on.
Yeah, he does.
With all these people.
Yeah, and he goes to the one person he kind of knows. And so Boyd is like, hey, Jim, listen, things around here have been a little, like, they've been a lot crazy ever since your family got here. We haven't had a chance to get to know each other, and let's change that. And, you know, I like that line, and I'm thinking, you know what, the next time, hopefully not for a long time, I notice something is going kind of wacky with someone, I'm going to say, you know what, we're not on the right foot here, and I'd like to change that. I love that. And he's like, you know, what are you guys doing for dinner? So then,
like, what are they going to say? Oh no, we're just going to sit home and have a nice little bottle of wine. I just think it's fun.
Well, I mean, he could have food in the house or whatever, or, you know, he might not have known that there's also a dinner that gets served. But the next scene is basically Fatima and Ellis showing Julie her little cubby space in their room.
Oh, wait, hold on. Yeah. I mean, I actually love this scene. It's a little weird, but I still love it. I think Colony House is just a little weird. You know, you know, they close the eyes, they have curtains, they have all the amenities. Beautiful.
Yeah.
All the amenities.
She's got a colony bed house with her very own pillow. She can name it whatever she wants.
And you know what I love about it is that Fatima, and I know I'm jumping the gun on you, but I'm going to do it anyways. I love that Fatima is the heart of Colony House this season.
Yeah.
And she knows, as much as she hates her mother because she's a 16-year-old little brat going through a big trauma. It doesn't, because she's just being a 16-year-old. But let me finish the statement.
I know. It just bothers me, I guess.
Okay, so that she's an annoying, and I'm purposely saying this, an annoying little 16-year-old she's going through her things, but let me finish, is that, you know, you still need your mom. You still need your comforts from home. And you know what? That's why she needs Fatima, because at this point, you know, Fatima is not her mom, but she's not her mom right now.
Yeah.
She's her colony house mom. And, and she's old enough to know better, but she's young enough to be cool.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And I just love, and I think they have that relationship now in real life, that the actors. So
I hope it's just,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, now I've been, you know, you see stuff on Instagram and they're like, they're having a ball, you know? I mean, who's better than them right now?
Yeah. So the 26th scene is in the sheriff's station bathroom, and Boyd is getting himself spiffed up for dinner with the Matthews family. And I, you know, like, I'm surprised he wasn't whistling. You know, he's just kind of trimming his beard and stuff. And then he looks in the mirror.
Ah! And... Sorry, couldn't.
That's all right. He screams, and I loved it. But it's just releasing everything that happened since the Matthews showed up.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know, everybody's got to give off some steam, and you only complain up. You never complain down.
Saving Private Ryan.
That's right. Saving Private Ryan. So he decides to go to the VIP dinner at the Lou's.
Not at the Lou's. It's at the diner.
At the diner. I meant the diner.
Yeah.
But yeah.
At the end of the booth, and he asks Ethan if the hamburger is good. And Ethan's like, yeah. And Tabitha is like, I've been meaning to say thank you for what you did the other night. And he said, my pleasure. You know, the people in this town, we are, you know, we take care of each other. It's like a family. And given the
It's like a frumily.
Yeah, it's a frumily. You guys are doing fine. Sarah brings over a plate of something, saying it's special for the newcomers. And it looks like a big plate of veggies. And she asks Ethan if he wants to help her bring over the rest of the food. And he joins her without the crutch. So the jukebox turns on and it plays the Joni Mitchell song Blue. Jim and Tabitha look at the jukebox quizzically. And Boyd says, yeah, they do that sometimes.
I love his answer to that. Yeah, they do that. Like, but don't even ask.
It's the same thing that Kenny does. It's dismissive. And it just comes on. And the interesting thing is, when it happens with Kenny and he's dismissive, he's got Jade with him. And Jade is a type of engineer. He's an imaginarium engineer. But then you've got Jim there, and he's like a technical engineer. And things don't just come on. There's something behind it. Something happened. But anyway, Kenny pokes his head in and he wants to talk to Boyd. Boyd gets up, and Jim and Tabitha look at each other, and Tabitha shakes her head. Are you there? Did we just cut out?
No, I'm fine.
All right. My screen just went down. Tabitha shakes her head, and it's like she's thinking of a memory, and she says that summer in Texas, but it's a fond memory. And Jim says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I make you feel like you're. And Joni Mitchell says, an empty space to fill in. That's what the song says. I just don't know that. And he says, I just don't know what I'm doing. And I don't know how to do that. But I've never meant to make you feel. I just feel so broken. And Tabitha says, hey, no, no. And she takes his hand and she's like, we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure it out together. Now, we know that at the beginning of this show, in episode one, they're taking this last trip and they're going to get a divorce when they get home. And if we pay attention to this episode, we know that, you know, Ethan's had a significant injury. And here he is at this point, he's walking without a crutch. He didn't even need that stick that Victor gave him. That stick was a prop, right? Because they're going on a quest. And Jim and Tabitha have had this huge argument this afternoon. And now they're sitting there and they're on the same page. He's saying, I'm broken. And she's like, we're going to fix us together. Meaning like they're stepping away from that. It's the first indication that they're stepping away from that divorce.
Right.
So Ethan brings over a bowl of sweet potatoes. And at the corner counter, Mrs. Lou says to Sarah, nice family, and the Matthews eat. Behind the counter, Sarah is working and suddenly her forearm hurts and the veins rise to the top of the skin and distinctly form the words, kill the boy.
Yeah, I know. Kill the boy.
Sarah looks at Ethan and then looks back at her arm and the message is gone. She recovers, but then she collapses and Boyd and Kenny are talking in the vestibule and see Sarah collapse and they come running and Ethan screams out her name and Sarah is convulsing on the floor. So this is the second person we see that convulses, Ethan being the first. The 28th scene, it's Colony House exterior. Victor is digging a hole with the other Colony House people looking on from the porch. And Donna sees his and runs to him. We're in the diner. Sarah's convulsing. Mrs. Lou and Boyd try to settle her. And then back to the final scene. Victor is digging a hole. Donna arrives and asks what he's doing because he's freaking people out. And he said, I was just trying to get a head start this time. And he has five holes dug and he's working on the sixth hole. Ta-da. Ta-da.
And that's
all I have to say about that.
All right. Well, now that we have all that done, you know, it was there's a lot of foreshadowing. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen. And this is a great table setting episode. This is the key to season two.
Yeah,
I really think there's a lot of season two in this, in that scene with Sarah. You know, Boyd wasn't the first person to have these type of worms in his arm.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to really figure out what that means. But folks, you know, we'd love to hear you, your thoughts on this, whether it's on the replay or it's in Instagram or TikTok or wherever you watch our podcast. And again, next week, we're going to be looking at, what are we going to be looking at? Season one, episode five, Silhouettes.
Silhouettes.
And awesome. if you want to support the podcast, you can always go to our Etsy shop and go to the What Is From shop and get any type of mugs or shirts or all that good stuff. Any closing thoughts, young lady?
I'm trying to connect this. I've created my first Ethan quest page and I've got notes written. Victor comes to get Ethan to look for the boy in white. Ethan has to go because the boy in white chose him just like he chose Victor once. So isn't the person on the quest, on a quest, they're chosen, right? And then will Ethan be trapped forever there and be the next man child? And then did Victor fail in his quest and is Ethan the next one to try? Those are my questions, but there's something, I'm looking at scene 19 and I'm not connecting it, but the land of evil where people go and are trapped. The only way out is death or to be saved by a hero on the quest. So I think that's why everyone died, because Victor failed in his quest.
I think it's more than that, but I don't know what it is. But
I know I'm trying to simplify things. Like I'm filling in my knowns or think are the knowns, and I'm trying to simplify it. So there were a collection of people in town, right? And one night, everyone dies. Every single person dies. And it kind of is telling me that Victor failed on his quest. He was the first one to be chosen. Now, he says Ethan is the next one to be chosen. We have a collection of people in town. And we know in the next season, even more people arrive in town. So if Ethan fails, or if they're all killed, that means Ethan fails in his quest. And I'm thinking that every time this happens again, what we think is two cars show up on the same day. They showed up on the same day with Victor, right? So maybe that guy Christopher was in one of those cars, because there's two cars parked in front of the diner in that picture that Ethan is, you know, young Ethan is in.
Right.
So maybe that was the first day of two cars. And now here we have another day of two cars. And maybe that starts the clock ticking. The two cars show up. The boy in wait picks Ethan. That's you know, I'm just trying to figure this out. Anyway.
All right. Well,
to say about
it's almost,
that.
It's almost 2 hours. So,
hey, I did it in 1 hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah, whatever.
Record.
Yeah, it's a record. So I guess we'll just thank everybody for listening to us for 49 into 50 episodes.
Oh my God, I'm still freaking out. I can't believe that.
And let's see who else checked in.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, I wanted to say congratulations on your 50th episode, and I got some people here. You guys, I'm sorry, there's shadows, but you know, we're working, we're trying to get it done.
You're in a horror show, that's why there's shadows.
All right, you guys, congratulations.
Thanks, guys, for your support.
Peace out.
Get you home. Let's go. Come on, get in your house. Let's go. Come on.